This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
There's a big picture conversation going on about the not only the demise of the Golden State Warriors this year, but is it over for this group? Should they consider moving on from fill in the blank? That's being discussed. All right. Maybe.
I don't know. You're still in the NBA Finals right now.
I mean, I get that it looks like they are easily second best to Boston. It looks like it. Never mind that they were a fourth quarter implosion away from winning game one, and they were flat better in game two. You know, Boston won game three, and they were clearly the better team, even though Golden State put on a third quarter run and actually took a lead with a couple of minutes to go in the third. But look, Boston was the better team throughout. See what happens tonight. I think Boston's going to win tonight. I think Boston, watching them, they look like the better team. But I think Golden State, when you add James Wiseman back into the mix and you give Moody and Kuminga another year, I think they have the makings for another really, really good run. Let's see if Klay Thompson can get healthier and more consistent. I mean, Steph Curry is still great. But we'll talk about that with the League Pass Lair. What we should do now is listen to the Wall of Sound and Tony La Russa. You can actually hear his brain growing bigger.
The Wall of Sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
All right, so yes, this is just interesting to me. Yesterday in Chicago, it was Dodgers and White Sox. And the Dodgers had a 6-5 lead batting top of the sixth inning. Freddie Freeman had just delivered a go-ahead RBI single. He's a left-handed batter off of a left-handed pitcher. Trey Turner is the batter next, and they're just pitching to him normal, and it gets to 0-2. And the next pitch was a curveball in the dirt or a slider in the dirt, and it gets all the way back to the backstop, and Freeman moves up to second. So first base is open. Tony La Russa came out, and with a left-handed batter on deck and a right-handed hitter, Trey Turner, better hitter, up, said, "Yeah, let's walk him," even though it was 1-2. So this is the way the White Sox broadcast crew acted.
Typically at two strikes, the league batting average is quite low.
Oh, yeah.
Now, wait a second.
They're going to intentionally walk him.
On 1-2?
Yep.
Can you explain that to me?
I would think you don't want Turner to do any more damage, and you want to take advantage of the lefty-lefty.
Typically, at two strikes, the league batting average is quite low.
Oh, yeah. It is that.
When was the last time you saw somebody intentionally walked on 1-2?
Didn't happen often.
That's my favorite part.
That is fantastic. Like, Jason Benetti and Steve Stone, great crew, great broadcast team. Benetti says it, and Steve Stone goes, "Yep." You can tell. Neither is a fan of the move. And I get it. It's not a move to be a fan of. Yeah. After the game, by the way, it didn't work out. Max Muncy, the hitter that La Russa ordered Trey Turner walked for, ended up hitting an opposite field 3-run home run, and it made the score 9-5. White Sox ultimately lost to the Dodgers 11-9. So after the game, La Russa is asked about this.
You explained the thought process on the intentional walk with
Turner
at 1-2 on the count.
So let me ask you a question. Is there some question about whether that was a good move or not?
I guess at 1-2 is the question at the count.
Do you know what he hits against left-hand pitching with 1-0-1 or two strikes? You know what he hits? Well, you know what Muncy hits with two strikes with against a left-hand pitcher? I mean, is that really a question? Because it was 1-2? Turner with a strike left against a left-hander is not something you can avoid if you can. And we had an open base, and Muncy happened to be the guy behind him, and that's a better matchup. Here again, somebody disagrees. That's the beauty of this game. Welcome to it. But that wasn't a tough call.
Was there a reason for waiting until 1-2, though? Was there a reason to not do it right away and wait till 1-2?
Well, that's when the pitch got away.
That's when the base was open. So, Look, it's not the worst move I've ever seen, what Tony La Russa did. So we don't have to go bananas about it. I would say this. First of all, I'm sure he just misspoke. Max Muncy wasn't coming up with a two-strike count on him, so he had a fresh at-bat. Muncy is a better hitter in his career versus left-handed pitchers than right-handed pitchers. So you were actually putting somebody up when he was in a more favorable at-bat for him. Now, Muncy's about a 160, 165 hitter this year, so the answer for La Russa should have been Turner's hitting 300, Muncy's hitting 165. I'm going to go with that matchup. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to go for lefty 1-2 because what really he should have done, and this is the way better move for La Russa, is to, we call it an unintentional intentional walk. At 1-2, you've got three chances to get Trey Turner to chase a ball out of the strike zone. Why not take advantage of that? Why not do that? Why not throw, three change-ups away against Trey Turner, or a slider away, or a slider up and in, or just do something different? You don't have to do that. You don't have to walk him. But that's what they chose to do, and maybe that would have been the better move, or the better question for Tony La Russa. Why not just pitch around him? Mm-hmm. Tony's got to be smarter than everybody. Back-to-back home runs for Texas in the top of the sixth. It is 7-4 East Carolina. Texas batting top of the sixth inning in Greenville. All right, we haven't heard this yet, so let's do this. Tom Brady, who most people know, has signed already between a $35 and $40 million annual contract to be Fox's future lead NFL analyst, was talking about opportunities after football, and here it is.
I mean, I had a lot of conversations with a lot of people, as I've had for the last 3 or 4 years in my career, about, different opportunities when I'm done playing with football, so... I kind of made a decision of what I'd like to do, and I'll get to be in the game of football. And I think for me, the most important thing is where I'm at now and, what I hope to do for this team. That's been my commitment to, this team and organization. It's been so much fun for me to come here 2 years ago. It's been almost 2.5 years now, and it's been an incredible part of my football journey. And it's not over, and we still got a lot to accomplish. So I got a long life ahead, and there's a lot of fun things to do ahead. I'm looking forward to what's ahead in football. But at the same time, none of us are promised much beyond what we have now. And this is the current moment. And I'm really excited about going out there to try to compete and win a championship.
Plus another episode of The Match, likely.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of The Match?
Not one second.
I did not watch anything of The Match.
Well, I know he was asked... And part of the context of that question, or his answer, I should say, was there are rumors floating around about him possibly joining the front office, or actually the ownership group, as a minority owner of the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, that rumor came out 3 months ago.
Yeah, but he was asked more about it because being at OTAs, and he never really denied it.
No, because here's, honestly, I've done enough reading on this. It was actually supposed to happen. He was supposed to... wasn't going to play. He was going to retire. He was going to go into Miami's front office. And then a year from now, he might come back on the field, right? Really? But then they went and did the whole thing with Brian Flores, and Brady was like, yeah, maybe I want to stay away from that organization.
Yeah.
Now, he might end up there, but yeah, so ultimately that was probably going to happen this offseason, where Brady was going to end up, because I think that his preference was to go to Miami 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And not to Tampa. I don't know what the... I mean, he had trouble beating Miami with New England. They did, actually. You know, yeah. He's got a losing record in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady has a losing record against the Dolphins in Miami. That's absolutely wild. All right. Game four. Is this the Warriors' last stand? Not only this series, but forever. Next. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But you
can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
And because we are constantly prisoners of the moment in sports, it has come to my attention that this is not only the last stand for the Golden State Warriors in this series, but maybe forever. So let's bring in the League Pass Lair. Back together for the first time in a couple of weeks. Brendan Whitted and Brian Geisinger will give you their particulars in a moment. They are our NBA analysts. Brendan, I will start with you. Is it over? Is this like when the Germans? It wasn't over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor.
Exactly. Nah, man. This is, I told you from Jump Street, this was going to be a long series. I think it's going to go seven. This is the pivotal game, though. Like, they Gold State got off on the wrong foot, lost home court advantage off jump, and again came up small in the fourth quarter. That's the surprising thing for me. Like, for a team that is the team with more experience, not only on the court, but at the coaching position, they're the team that's come up small in fourth quarters. And that's a surprise. You know, I mean, they scored 11 points in the fourth quarter, like completely crapped the bed, did the same thing in the first game. Gave up 40.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just a surprise to me. Like, I didn't see that coming. And it was disappointing to see them come up so small, turn the ball over so frequently, not be able to finish defensive possessions with rebounds. It was disappointing.
There's no question. Brian Geisinger is back with us after spending some time in the deserts of Utah. All right, so talk to me about this, Brian. Tell me why Golden State has been so pedestrian in two of the three fourth quarters, and is it time to maybe put Draymond Green out to pasture?
No, it's not. Not quite time for that yet. He was one of the best defensive players in the league this season an injury. He may have won Depoy over Marcus Smart if not for an injury, and he's been instrumental in them getting back to the finals. Like, look, sometimes some games, you know, it just, you don't have it right now. And that's kind of happening with Draymond. But I still think what he brings to you defensively is imperative. And it's like what that entire operation on that side of the floor hinges on. On offense, Golden State, they need his passing. They need his playmaking.
Right.
They need the creation. They need the handoffs. They need the slips. They need the short rolls with Steph Curry. So no, it's not time just yet. You got to remember, he is going up against one of the best NBA defenses in the last 20 years. Like, I know he's not having it offensively right now. He's never been much of a scorer or a shooter since maybe early in his career. But no, we're not at the point now where we're ready to move on from Draymond Green. In fact, Golden State needs him more now than ever before. Starting tonight.
All right, let me just change the conversation. Not really changing the conversation, because Golden State's got a couple of guys who might be able to impact the game, and Brian Geisinger and Brendan Whitted are here. And I'll start with you here, Brian. My read on Game 3 was that we could talk about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart each going for more than 20. To me, the difference in the game was Boston was just way better than Golden State at the rim on both ends of the floor. Offensive rebounding on one end, clearly an advantage for the Celtics, and then seven block shots on the other, where Golden State just couldn't get anything really around the rim. How does that change no matter what Draymond does?
Yeah, I mean, Golden State literally doubled up Boston in the paint, in terms of points in the paint. That's game right there. Like, that's it. That's you do that, and you know, you have that kind of defense, and what that does as far as creating free throws and kick out threes, like, that's it. So whomever wins the paint like that, like, this really does feel like one of those games where both these teams are very good, they're dynamic on two sides of the court, and it's just like, which of these two teams is going to push the right buttons at the right moment and get into the paint the most. And I think really the ability of Marcus Smart to get in there was big. Because once he's able to do that, then that creates kickouts for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
How does Golden State win that battle, Brendan?
Ooh, buddy, it was great watching how the Celtics exploited that switch and kind of picked on Curry a little bit. Curry got into a foul trouble in the first half of Game One. He had three fouls, and I thought they went away from that a little bit too much in Game Two. In Game Three, you saw it a little bit more. They ISO'd a little bit more on him. And again, Steph is not a minus defender. He's a quality defender, but he's just smaller. And they have guys in Brown and Tatum and even Smart, who's just a bull. Like, he's just a strong dude that can just like kind of bully him a little bit once that switch comes and once they can put him in the basket a little bit in the paint. I don't even know how much more they can do other than just try to fight that switch. They'll switch really, really easily. And so what they can do then is maybe try to – like, I think they should try to take it out of Tatum's hands a little bit more. And by the way, he was a great decision maker.
Yep.
Again, like, he was back at – he was doing the thing he was doing in Game One, where it was, hey, while he wasn't shooting that well in Game One, he was finding open guys, skip passing, hitting the weak side, and starting to, like, really exploit that sort of thing. He's so good offensively that him taking that step as a playmaker, as a passer – getting it right in the guy's shooting pocket so that they can go make the drive or make the shot immediately, and makes it really, really difficult. For me, I think they just got to fight the switch a little bit more. Hey, sometimes you don't have to switch immediately. I know that's what you want to do, but, you know, if they're going to pick on Curry in that way, hey, maybe fight over that top of that screen. Maybe give a little help and get back. Like, give them a little – you have to give people different looks. That's essentially what it is. Like, these guys are too talented for them to be able to walk up court and know exactly what you're going to do. And so sometimes you're going to have to fight over those screens, and sometimes you're just going to have to not switch because there's nothing really Curry can do in those moments. Like, Marcus Smart was getting like 3, 4, 5 dribbles in the paint against Curry. That's too much. Like, he's a good defender, but he's limited. So you can't have Tatum and Brown and Smart being able to have that sort of ISO in that sort of way. In terms of Draymond Green, man, like, it's tough. He's regressed offensively in his career. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we do have to have an honest and open conversation. Otto Porter Jr. was better than him last night. And I thought it was weird that they just kind of went away from him. They even went to Iguodala in the game. He was a plus four in the game. They lost by 16 points in a game he played 21 minutes. That's hard to do. And the only way you're able to do it is if you're making quality plays. It's not his scoring or anything like that. It's the offensive rebounds. It's fighting defensive rebounds. If you're going to be – the Golden State went small, and they were still not as quick to the ball. So you can't be small and slow. Like, you got to pick one. You can't be both.
What are you – I'm small and slow.
Right, and I wouldn't start you in no damn game.
Well, okay, game that's a point. It's a good point. It's a good point. It was an unnecessary response from you, Brendan Whitten. All right, so – how does Golden State, like, I thought Gary Payton would play a bigger role in game three because he played a big role in game two. I thought that Payton, and you and I may have talked about this, I thought that Payton, who surprised me by even being available in game two, I thought he was part of the turnaround in the second quarter with Draymond and Clay and Kevin Looney all on the bench. And then he barely plays in game three. Does Gary Payton, does Jonathan Kuminga, who gives them size and athleticism, maybe even Moses Moody, do these guys have to play a bigger role because it just looks like Boston's been bullying them?
Yeah, they just don't seem as athletic. You know what I mean? Like, they're faster the ball, they're bigger. Now, those offensive rebounds absolutely killed Golden State in the fourth quarter. Like, they just, like, Boston kept getting bites at the apple, and it was just too much for them. And so, like, hey, if you're going to go small, everyone has to rebound. Guys were leaking out, trying to get in transition. I understand that you want to play in transition versus a really good defensive team like the Celtics. If the tallest guy on the court is 6'7", 6'8", everybody has to rebound. Guards on down. I didn't feel like they had enough urgency in that sort of way. Hopefully Curry is healthy also for game four. After getting landed on and not getting that foul call, which was interesting. They have to be more physically engaged for this game four, because this is the season. This is the series. This is their legacy. Like, you're not finna come back down 3-1. Y'all ain't got LeBron in your squad, okay? So, like, you have to understand the sort of urgency that's happening.
I don't think it's a must-win for Golden State. I think they can still win the series. Because what it comes down to, of course, they could lose in game five. There's no doubt about it. And I actually think the team that wins game four will win game five. So, like, I'm sort of, like, contradicting myself here. But I do think that even if the Warriors lose this game, they win game five, and now you're really just, you have to win one road game. They were going to have to win a road game anyway, especially after losing game one. So, I don't think it's as much of a must-win as everybody else, but I think it all depends on how they look. I think you can play a good game if you're Golden State and lose, but they can't do what they can't put up 11 points in the fourth quarter like they did in game three. They can't look inept on the defensive end, especially against drives like they did in game three. I think the way it looks is arguably more important than what the outcome of the game is. But I also don't buy that this is the end of the dynasty because, I mean, Clay only played half a season. He hadn't played in 2 years. So I still think that there is more for Clay, maybe not this year, but next year.
They wasted a good Clay game, though. Like, I think that's part of what's...
I think they'll get another good Clay game.
I think they will, too. But, like, I mean, he went... What was he? He was 7-17, 25 points. Like, he was... That was good. Kind of vintage Clay right there, and they kind of wasted it away. And by the way, the happiest person about Draymond's poor performances is Poole. Like, he wasn't bad, but, like, they needed more from him. They need a little bit more from him. Wiggins went for 18. Like, those are the things that you want. You want 25 from Clay. You want 31 from Curry. You want 18 from Wiggins. Poole needed more. They needed more from that bench because Golden State only outscored them by 1 point on that auxiliary unit.
All right, so let me ask you this as we let you go. Brendan Whitted is here. Technical difficulties has robbed us of Brian Geisinger. Or maybe he's still out in Moab. Here's the – when I look at this game, the three games that we have seen, it just strikes me that the Warriors have more – question marks regarding where the points are coming from. I know Curry's going to get his. He's going to get 31 tonight because that's what Curry does. But I don't know what I'm going to get from Clay. I don't know what I'm going to get from Andrew Wiggins. I don't know what I'm going to get from Jordan Poole. With Boston, I mean, I might not get a great game from Jason Tatum. I'm probably going to get a good game from Jason Tatum. But they've got so many more options. I could get 20 from Marcus Smart and 20. I mean, Al Horford could give us 19 and 14 tonight.
Or he could give us two.
Right,
he could give us two. And he just, Smart, like, just like Marcus Smart. Right. Like, I was about to say, like, there's some question. Like, so I kind of look at Curry and Tatum as being a wash, right? Like, okay, those are two superstars. That's a wash. What are we going to get from Brown? What are we going to get from Clay? What are we going to get from Poole? And then who's the third best scorer on the Celtics? I think it's probably Smart.
Yeah,
I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I have a lot of questions about where the points come from for the Celtics, too. They're both two. These teams really remind me of one another, not necessarily in how they attack. You know, Celtics are more of a drive and kick team. Golden State is more of a motion offense. But, like, I know one dude's going to show up regardless for both teams. Let's move that off the table for a second. Who's going to be the next guys? Who are going, like, and Brown has shown up routinely as being that sort of guy.
Especially early in games, right.
Particularly early in games. The things that bothered him versus the Heat, the Golden State doesn't have. They don't have a lot of great on-ball defenders. Draymond Green, we mentioned him earlier, even on ball, and this is according to Second Spectrum, he's given up 1.24 points per possession as the primary defender. No.
That doesn't sound good.
It's not great. It's not great. I'll be honest with you. It's not great. So who are these point of attack defenders that they have? The Heat seem to have a ton of them. Golden State really just has the one. Like, especially as Clay gets back from his injury. Outside of Wiggins, it gets a lot. That bench gets really, really short. That's why I thought Gary Payton Jr. would be a bigger point, and I hope I see him more. I thought Kerr went with Green for way, way too long. I'm interested to see how that goes. Like, I want to see some different some changes for Golden State. I want to see Kerr show up a little bit more because I thought he got out coached last night. In game three.
They've been great in the third quarters and not so great in the fourth quarters, and I don't know if that's just Boston wearing Golden State out. The third quarter, that's the adjustment quarter, and Steve Kerr has won that all three times.
They got it last. They got it 33-25 in game three. They still won that third quarter.
They won,
but like Celtics fought a little bit back at the end of that third quarter, and it was a 1-2 possession game as opposed to being the Golden State up big. I want to feel Kerr a little bit more in this game four. It's time to earn the chips, bro.
There you go, Brendan Whitted, my man at HU Cosell on Twitter. Thank you very much. Go Bison. And I'll talk to you next week.
You know what it is.
You got it. You got it, man. Talk to you later. Brendan Whitted, and hopefully Brian Geisinger would clear up his technical difficulties. We'll talk to him next week.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.